So, coming out of that consideration of the eternal versus the transitory, we're opening today's talk on the historical landmarks of the Theosophical movement. October is the traditional starting point for ULT Philadelphia for our quote, winter study cycle. And it's a fitting moment in which to harvest the fruits of summer study of the Gita and to reconnect with the spiritual forces supporting all forms of theosophical studies, all expressions of the timeless, eternal theosophical movement. Now, at the end of October, ULT Philadelphia harvests the various themes covered in this month's Sunday presentations. Consideration has been given to the meaning of the word theosophy and the Theosophical movement, to the three objects of the Theosophical movement reestablished by the Theosophical Society, and to the impulse behind the Theosophical movement. The pondering, you will note, began in theosophical ideals and abstractions and continued into the scientific philosophical realities of the cause of the Theosophical movement. This morning, it is time to seek the historical, verifiable evidence of the Theosophical movement in the common era that we are experiencing together. It is proposed that more than 18 million years have passed since the lighting up of Manas, mind. On average, therefore, each soul incarnate in the human form has experienced as many as 12,000 or more personal lives. That's a possibility mathematically. Throughout the duration of this expression, this chain of expressions, the self-conscious have experienced life, endured conditions, and to varying degrees endeavored to find meaning, to make meaning of mundane ways. The spiritual movement toward perfectibility is universal and ceaseless among all soul. HPB wrote that we can trace these movements back century by century, as far as detailed historical records extend. With modern archaeological and scientific technology, that tracing process can go back before detailed written historical records by way of symbols in art and architecture. Students of theosophy have produced hundreds of pages of research materials on ancient and modern personages and forces or events marking cycles worldwide among all peoples and places in our common era. This morning's presentation cannot cover all of that. This morning's presentation can only offer a bare overview of the entirety of the concrete evidence of the Theosophical movement. This morning's invitation is to each student and each visitor to read sources that attract your individualized heart and mind. The possibilities for the references are endless. Articles of the Ancient Landmark series. The History of the Theosophical Movement. They're two different books. Isis Unveiled, a wide array of derivative literature and biographies. Consider the evidence independently for yourself. Observe world events now and ponder how the impulse of the Theosophical Movement has bubbled up in similar eras in the past. Wherever thought has struggled to be free, whenever the impulse behind free will and choice explores the universality of the human condition and the need for boundless efforts to uplift all physical existence to spiritual ethics. There, any one of us can discern landmarks of the theosophical movement. So this morning, the talk will merely skim the surface of trends and landmarks across the last several centuries of the Common Era. This talk will merely treat the landmarks so crucial to the evolution of the Western mind. Rest assured, there is a far grander sweep of force than the few people mentioned this morning. 18 million years and counting. Among all realms, among all great races, among all minor ethnicities, if you will, on all continents. Impressed in the heart of the soulful collective is the yearning to know the truth, to understand the meaning, to promote the best, to live in harmony with the natural cyclic patterns of the rise and fall of manifestations. Just as Krishna spoke of eternal spiritual existence in the Gita, so William Q. Judge wrote of the ongoing and periodic soulful manifestation. Quote, "There is a certain object for our general work. It is to start up a new force, a new current in the world, whereby great and long gone jnanis, or wise ones, will be attracted back to incarnate among men here and there, and thus bring back the true life and the true practices." So, what can be tracked in Western historical accounts to provide proof of an ongoing endeavor to find, preserve, adjust, and regenerate the power of the Theosophical movement? Since 1375 of the current era, it is possible to note that the last quarter of every century has been charged, energized, with a great undercurrent flowing age after age, a great coursing in the ocean of mind. Modern historiographers theorize about the role that great personages, great people play in creating events and eras, versus the theory that there is a role that great forces among the collective peoples play in creating trends and eras. Theosophical studies reveal the blending of these two points of view. Natural impulse and cyclic force are facts. The self-conscious soul of the human condition generates both collectively and individually to create harmony or to create dysfunction. The universal source is. The forces created by humans are variable. When the self-conscious generate enough spiritual desire to align with the harmony of universality, when the students are ready, great teachers or masters can appear. We have a problem with a cell phone that needs to be quelled. Thank you. In 1875 to 1900 of the Common Era, The Secret Doctrine was published as a collation of human thought across time. The dedication to that book states, "This work I dedicate to all true theosophists in every country and of every race, for they call it forth, and for them it was recorded." Blavatsky was working on the crest of a wave begun centuries earlier in the era of 1375 to 1400. The United Lodge of Theosophists continues that effort as best can be, and states in the Declaration that the true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. The manifestations of the modern theosophical movement differ with the needs and conditions of the times and place. But the universality of the underpinnings and the spiraling evolutionary effect can still be discerned through any differences. Very early on in Western history, or the development of Western civilization, there existed mystery schools in Alexandria, Egypt, that built upon the classical Greek, Roman, and Indian civilizations. Neoplatonism gave birth to the first use of the word Theosophia. Modern agents of the Theosophical movement included Philalethians like Ammonius Saccas, and there's a personage that any one of us can read about and ponder. It was with the rise of the theocratic Roman Empire and the death of the girl philosopher Hypatia that these early landmarks of the Theosophical movement were halted for a time. The studies went on, but in private, in secret. From the point of view of the peoples of the peninsula that we now know as Europe, a period of the Dark Ages descended, and overall, that time is labeled as lasting from anywhere from the 5th through the 14th centuries, depending on the historiographer. False teachings about the nature of man and nature, the duration of life, and the imposition of restraints on education, science, and histories ensued in those centuries in the West. But meanwhile, on the Asian continent, the African continent, and in the Americas, the indigenous maintained accounts of the wisdom that had flourished previously, prior to the Alexandrian period, all the way back 18 million years. In 1375 Common Era, the time was right for a great reform to be established in order that the ripple effects could be felt big time in 1875 with Blavatsky in the West. Cycles of impression converged in the last quarter of the 14th century, and a Tibetan reformer, Tsongkhapa, became the thought leader who could bring Buddhism back to its pure line of teachings. He established Lamaism, a Tibetan line we know as, quote, the yellow cap or Gelugpa monks, studying the pure metaphysical aspects of Buddhism. This highest and most orthodox line existed in stark contrast to the Dukpa or the red caps in the southern areas of Asia. But that latter effort of the red caps had not maintained the ethical and moral practices of the original Buddhistic schools and had descended into sorcery. As part of his reform, his efforts to bring theosophy back into the collective mind and heart in a pure line, Tsongkhapa went a step further than establishing the Yellow Cap School. Calling together a convocation of like-minded monks and seers, he proposed that the natural cycles were right, the impulse was right, to establish an effort in the last quarter of every century. As the impulse within the collective rose within that cycle, there would be a need for advanced souls to assist and to teach and exemplify the ancient lines of wisdom, theosophy. Each century might see technological developments, scientific advances, and an evolving sense of the Hermetic teaching, as above, so below. As the natural impulse to harvest ancient wisdom rose, increasing degrees of intuition would rise. Thought leaders would arise around the globe with masters working behind the scenes, present to provide guidance and companionship as karma allowed. The impulse is natural. The expression of that impulse is up to soul working in the human state. Now, any student can investigate the landmarks of the historic period to determine when and how each of these last quarter centuries manifested theosophy, manifested the spiritual surge or impulse. Thus, each of us can prove the theosophical movement for ourselves. From the seed of the European and the American eras, much can be gleaned. So let's think about it. 100 years after Tsongkhapa, in the 1440s, actually, the printing press was invented. Gradually, classical literature and inspirational works could be made available to all who could read and think for themselves. Such a development surely assisted the yellow cap effort going forward through the centuries. In the late 1400s, one example that can be studied is Paracelsus, one of the many working in Europe to demonstrate unity in nature, man as a microcosm of the macrocosm, and the role of spiritual alchemy. Blavatsky identified Paracelsus as the greatest occultist of the Middle Ages in Europe. In the meantime, in the same era, Martin Luther would spark the Protestant Reformation, calling for a return to the original teachings of the Christ to be studied by moral individuals reading and thinking for themselves. Studying and comparing his efforts with those of Tsongkhapa is quite revealing. In the late 1500s, 1575 to 1600, when the next cycle spiraled, the blooming renaissances of Italy and Germany saw a great surge in the arts, music, classical literature, and sciences. Humanism, the belief in the value and potential of the human being, each human being, was being explored. Among the thought leaders of the time was Jakob Burma, a natural clairvoyant and mystic who was often called the nursling of the Nirmanakayas. Burma's ideas on gravity, the laws of attraction and repulsion, or cause and effect, would be studied by another later, that one called Isaac Newton. Burma can also be researched freely and openly by any one of us. By the time of 1675 to 1700, the next 100-year cycle, humanism and scientific observations began to influence the expression of philosophical and political thinking. Modern historians use terms like the Enlightenment, the Glorious Revolution, the Age of Reason for this era. The Protestant Revolution in England was testing the validity of the Church of Rome. Philosophers, those belonging to the Age of Reason, like Hobbes, Locke, and Rousseau, were exploring the nature of human beings, the structure of social contracts, the theory of where individual liberty and responsibility met in contrast to governmental control, responsibilities, and accountabilities. The struggle of free thought against a united church and state can be clearly seen in all of those efforts. And in that time period and forward, it's recommended that a personage named Saint-Germain be studied as well. 100 years later, 1775 to 1800, the prior achievements of those last quarters of the centuries culminated in the birth of new experiments in government. First came the writings of Thomas Paine and the founders of what we now call the United States of America. The Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, and the Constitution and its amendments can all be looked at through the lens of the Theosophical movement. The seed for future practices, inspired by universality, individual responsibility, and the perfectibility of human nature, were embedded by writers whose deist and Masonic roots did not support state churches, theocracies. The great debates that would continue to the present time, to our day and age, the effort to define human equality, paralleling theosophic concepts, can clearly be seen in the late 1700s. And the very conservative American Revolution has truly its power in the ongoing evolution and the natural integrity of an educated citizenry practicing the ideals, calling them forth, and bringing them into reality. In Europe, during the time period of 1775 to 1800, you can find landmarks to study additional thought leaders of various kinds. There is certainly Saint-Germain, Saint-Martin, Mesmer, Cagliostro. These were all Masons and self-styled, quote, brothers of light. Mesmer was a physician who studied Paracelsus and explored the unseen portions of the human body, animal magnetism, vital fluids, natural healing, the astral. Cagliostro used magnetism to heal. Saint-Martin traveled across continents and is also readily documented in historical accounts. Saint-Germain, a musician, linguist, seer, prophesizer, and magician, was called one of the greatest Oriental adepts of Europe, as well as Deathless, and there are others to study as well. And that brings us to the ultimate reason for our cause of ULT and the Theosophical movement. In 1875 to 1900, the Theosophical movement as we know it would be buoyed by the confluence of cosmic forces and cycles. There is the conclusion of the first 5,000 years of the Kali Yuga, the conclusion of a minor 2,500-year cycle that dates from the birth of the Buddha, who had so inspired Tsongkhapa. And there were various astrological studies involving the rise of spirituality, coinciding as forces as well. All of these natural impulse forces allowed a karmic scenario where spirituality, ideals, and social reform, as well as cultural concerns, could be examined. The thought leaders representing the Great Lodge of Masters, H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge, taught and published renditions of materials previously considered sacred, secret, or veiled in the earlier centuries. The print medium, the bloom of the printing press, now cycled to allow publications in a quantity and in a range never before considered possible. Each of the previous last quarters allowed for a degree of knowledge to be imparted. The conditions of time and place allowed for the spiral of an evolutionary path for the Theosophical movement. In Blavatsky's time, thought and religion, an expression of it, could be freer. A Russian woman, an immigrant, could speak and write more plainly than some of her predecessors were able to. The Buddha could present exoteric ethics in his time and place. Tsongkhapa could restore them. The Upanishads could present esoterically metaphysical symbols. And Blavatsky could do both. The objects of the Theosophical Society and the fundamentals of theosophy could guide all seekers for centuries to come. Divine wisdom is now available to the public in a couple of ways. First, from within, through intuition and the eternal impress. As above, in the words of Krishna, so below, in our own voice. Secondly, divine wisdom is available from without, through unadulterated teachings that have been rediscovered, preserved, and broadcast for all. In Isis Unveil, and you can find this in Volume 2, page 99, it is said that the present Theosophical movement is in line with all that came before. In the 19th century, wisdom was presented to the logical, reasoning mind through philosophy, mysticism, myth, legend, theogony, and ethics. Blavatsky was the sixth mission since Tsongkhapa. So how can we look back and assess 1975 to the year 2000? Well, that's up to each of us as an independent study. Everyone can reflect on the failings of the original Theosophical Society to continue the promise of the Theosophical movement. There was a break. Knowing the three fundamentals and using them as a solid ruler with which to analyze cultural developments, any student, all students, can search for those thought leaders who emerged from 1975 to 2000, those leaders who stressed equality, universal justice, supported free thought, and the exploration of the interplay between humans and nature. Those individuals who developed new modes of technological communications so that we can communicate these teachings as the free and open birthright to all humans, all soul. The triad of education, religion, and true fraternity is a life force that transcends individual man, groups of men, nations. Everyone can identify partial genius serving humanity from 1975 to 2000. You probably have several in your mind. Einstein, Gandhiji, Dr. Hutchins of the University of Chicago, who took it upon himself to republish the great books of the Western world and bring all of the ancient literature back together. The publication of what was once called the Manus Reader, coming out of LA. These, we can also think of religious leaders striving for ecumenical understanding and universal brotherhood. The 14th Dalai Lama of the Lamaist line currently teaches that his religion is kindness itself. Well, every one of us can envision the period of 2075 to 3000, though many of us present this morning won't be around in the physical probably by 2075. But that is a promise of a future cycle in which accomplishments of the application of eternal verities, justice, law, compassion, confidence in the possibilities of growth and discovery, building on all these cycles of history and civilization that have come before. Seek and ye shall find. The mystical power of self-ideation in the eternal mind, in spirit, can establish righteousness, can right what is wrong. The theosophical movement is no cult or sect, but is behind each and all. And it is in the current endeavor, our endeavor, as individuals, as a collective of students, it is the Dharma of our incarnations to unite and call the theosophical movement forth, call it back for 2075 when the cycles are right. So we have a decision to make. Shall we be a force for the cause, the theosophical movement, or will we determine to be something else? Now, that invitation to come together and study and make it real and call it forth, that's for us. You came here this morning. MDW, what did you bring with you?
Well, isn't that what we are doing? We are trying to do that by having these Zoom meetings or the meetings at 1917 Walnut. Now, isn't that part of the effort?
That's part of the effort, absolutely part of the effort. And if we look around at Theosophy Hall, and if we look around at the physical forms that we can see on the screen, we might note that many of us have been studying this information. When? Since the 1970s. And so as we come together in, mornings like this, where we have either studied the topic individually, or we've put together an effort to publicize it, or we're sharing ideas verbally, or whether we are that very potent spiritual force of witness on the scene, someone who's watching and listening and making that internal effort to assimilate what's being heard, to go out and investigate it and apply it. We are calling forth. We're aligning ourselves soul by soul by soul with this greater force of the theosophical movement. Have no fear. It's ongoing. SL.
So even though we can trace in the last 25 years a cycle of, let's call it, spiritual regeneration or creativity, the other 75 years are not without value, though. Could we call them times of spiritual challenge or even spiritual reflection, which are just as necessary?
If we consider the other 75 years, it's as though in the last quarter, there's a great deal of farming that's gone on. The soil has been tilled, the seeds have been planted, effort was made to start the crop as best it could. And then if you start to look, you can study the waves of history. And it's great to do during the 1900s, from 1900 into well into the 1920s. There was a pandemic. There was social, political, economic unrest, tremendous period of reactionary forces working against universal spiritual brotherhood, working against the tremendous reforms that had been established. And then there was the turmoil of two world wars, and some would say World War II never ended, just continued. So we see this period of action and then reaction. Action and reaction. And those 75 years for some is a rest period, but you can also on your own look at what were the precursors of what might have happened in one of the centuries. If you think about the 1900s, for instance, yes, Blavatsky and Judge were working from 1875 to 1900. However, from 1800 on to 1875. There were the New England Transcendentalists. You've got Alcott, Emerson, Ripley, Wordsworth, all working, Thoreau, all working to continue the effort to consider what's the eternal truth? What is the true nature of man? How does this work? Where's the cause and effect? Where is the perfectibility? How does this come about? And in particular, there's, I think it's Wordsworth. Our birth is but a sleep and a forgetting. The soul that arises with us, our life's star, hath had elsewhere its setting and cometh from afar, not in entire forgetfulness and not in utter nakedness, but trailing clouds of glory do we come from God, who is our home. And you can look through the history of those 75 years, pick a century, find out what appeals to you, and then see if you can tease out different thinkers across time that laid the foundation, did the groundwork literally for the big surge. So the ideas were in the atmosphere when the impulse among the collective rises up. The information is there for the seekers to find. SL?
Yes, following along that line, of course, in the first part of the 17th centuries, let's say from 1600, first 15, 20 years, and going on, you had the tremendous, incomparable influence of William Shakespeare in his sonnets and plays, which, in besides them being literary masterpieces, some of them. He really created our awareness of the human soul, its moral struggle, its inner dialogues and conflicts in all different aspects of life that before had never been presented in a popular way, in a dramatic form, that people could either hear and be inspired by or watch at performances. It was sort of, in a way, a rebirth of the old mysteries, mystery plays.
Yeah, the same technique. Granted, the mystery schools, there were very serious students that would gather together, and because of their virtue and morality, and their studies, their karmic intent, were able to gain access to the inner workings of a particular school of religious philosophy or scientific philosophy. But the mystery schools coincided, especially among the ancient Greeks, and because our education has forced us into this container theory of Western civilization somehow being unique to this little peninsula that we call Europe. No, the Greek, Hellenic, pure Greek, and the Hellenistic, the Greek civilization that was from Asia, the Middle East, and North Africa, a blend of all that genius. Their comedies, their tragedies, the great schools of drama, the plays that they produced were all exoteric, public, open education for the masses that could not read, didn't have access to script that was handwritten. But they could see and hear and intuit the moral lessons. And indeed, as the comment just said, Shakespeare used that same technique, if you will. This student humbly proposes that we're doing the same thing with film and plays. What comes to mind is Luke Skywalker, as a character. Skywalker, it's a term in the poetry of the Voice of the Silence. How and why does that pop up in a modern film as the name of a particular character who turns out to be a heroic character akin to the ancient classics in Greeks and Rome, the Shakespearean model of these tremendous warriors? And then we have to smile and think, well, wait a minute, what's Arjuna? But the same kind of lesson. And even what we're reading as a judge rendition of the Gita that we hold so dear and study 12 months a year, it's a song, isn't it? It's meant to be recited or sung. And so we have a scenario today where technologically we can buy inexpensive books, we can borrow them from the library, we can read them for free online. This is a culmination of centuries of effort to get this information out into the public mind and heart and to keep it there. The work is ongoing, it never ends. There is a chat that just popped up. I hope I can get to it. Let's see.
Like it, would you
The
like it really?
question is, didn't the New Age movement begin in the late 20th century? New Agers call HPB the mother of the New Age. That comment is very applicable, and there are more than a few students who came into Theosophical studies in the 1970s because they segued from some kind of New Age research that they themselves were doing. Blavatsky, of course, never coined the term that she was the grandmother or the mother of the New Age. And certainly, what we have to imagine is that the surge, the spiritual surge in these last 25 years, is just like the sunlight. It's a fact in nature. It's a rising up, literally, of force and energy. And some are intuitively, karmically conditioned, so they're ready to manifest that in a kind of straight line of study. And some New Agers did that. They were very, very into studying the classics, looking at how did the secret doctrine, how did Isis bring together a bouquet of this thinking and writing from all around the world, all people, and why was this in so many ways blocked from development in the Western mind of Europe and North America? Other New Agers were a variation. The sunshine shone for them, the impulse was there, but they got sidetracked. Instead of sticking with a study of ethics, morality, the classical, inspirational, they went into other applications, almost latter day spiritualism, latter day applications of mineralogy or crystals, kind of a reapplication of alchemy. So it's up for each of us to look at something clearly and s can we see the eternal behind the endeavor? And can we humbly not judge, not condemn, but assess what the manifestation is and how full it is? Is it compatible and in a straight line, or is it a variation? Can we blow the dust off the variation of the New Age claims and find the nugget, the essence, the diamond soul within it, beneath it? SL?
Now, a variation of that expression actually, we think, appears 100 years earlier with the idea, Masonic idea, of the new order of the ages, which appears with the pyramid and the eye over it on American currency. So, symbolizing that awareness of awakening of something in the consciousness of humanity in general. marking the new order, or the new order of the ages.
Very, very, very important. And one of the interesting studies that's available is the entire Age of Reason, and how during that time period the thought leaders were working so hard, against the notion of original sin and human beings as lowly sinners and worms that needed to be saved, by, religious leaders or kings and queens. The Age of Reason is interesting because what they stressed was the power by which each human being could understand the universe and improve their own condition. They featured knowledge, freedom, the development of happiness. That's why we see a phrase, the pursuit of happiness, in our founding documents. And despite the propaganda that's a reactionary propaganda that's around today, the founders were working with deism. They were working with understanding how you use a proper methodology for the use of reason, science as logic, math as logic and communication. How does induction and deduction work? They were working independently of any concept of divine revelation. And in fact, they were looking at one source. They called it the Grand Architect. They were looking at cause and effect in terms of reward and punishment based on an individual's expression of conscience and morality. But they also held what we might call the third fundamental, the evolution, the intent that humans are capable of changing by way of virtue, piety, purity. That was all 100 years before HPB. And it's interesting, you can do a study for yourself of the number of times in the writings of Blavatsky and Judge where they're talking about cold reasoning, logic alone, only being as good as the premise that's being used. And the great call of the Theosophical movement in the late 1800s is to take the notions of deism and say, yes, okay, now add the heart doctrine to it. Think from the heart. Use compassion and altruism. And that will be the full package, the mystical package, the duality that soul and the human state is capable of.
It's time, I think.
Yep, it's just 12 o'clock. So if you enjoyed Friday night's presentation of the Mark of the Masters in the Constitution and the documents of the founders, if you are tickled by any of these proposals and concepts this morning, please continue your own study. It's a good one, it's enlivening, but remember, please, Wednesday night and Friday evening, they're both available for us to join again. Have a great day.
Bye.